Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. What does white privilege mean to you? It's not always easily defined or understood. Our guest this segment is trying to change that and help us understand the nuances of race relations. Tom Schweitzer is a retired business executive who now focuses on helping people understand issues of race and white privilege. He's put together a template for a journal allowing individual reflection on these issues. It's titled The Understanding What It Means to Be White and Privileged Journal. Tom Schweitzer joins me in studio. Tom, nice to have you with us. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Don. Pleasure to be here.
Let me get your definition of white privilege.
White privilege is a system of unearned benefits and opportunities that one group in our case, white people in the United States, have over people of color.
What piqued your interest in this subject, Tom?
I think I was first made aware that race existed when my grandfather took me to a Cardinals game in the old Busch Stadium, and the Dodgers were in town. And this was in the early 50s, and Jackie Robinson was playing. And I can remember my grandfather saying, "What do you see in the right field bleachers?" Well, what you saw was the right field bleachers was all black. Now, the stadium had been integrated, but by tradition, that was the seating arrangement. And that was the first awareness I had that there were two races. I don't think I understood what that meant. But he pointed out why the African-American people were sitting in one specific section of the ballpark, and we could go wherever we wanted. And that just impressed me and raised a question that there was something called race in the United States. I had the opportunity to hear Dr. King speak at our synagogue in 1963, and his words were powerful. And as I got older and studied and began to look at the future of my children and the world they would live in, I began to learn what race and privilege means in the United States. And the understanding of privilege came much later than understanding race.
So this has been steeping in your own personal life for a long, long time. Was there something more recently, perhaps, that caused you to say, I'm going to do something about it or try to with this journal idea?
Right. Well, I'd been doing some training and facilitating for over 20 years with some of the great organizations in St. Louis. But I think after Michael Brown in Ferguson and heard friends and people I hang out with make comments that I were beginning to find offensive and similar to what we're hearing now in St. Louis with the protests. And people would come to me and say, you know, I know you've read about race and privilege, but what does that mean? So I was looking for a simple and sometimes private way for white people to begin to question themselves and start on what we call their journey to understanding race and privilege.
Tell us about the format of the journal and how you are attempting through this to get people to have what essentially is a conversation with themselves, correct?
Correct. I've done a lot of executive coaching and leadership development, and the best way to do that, I think, is through asking questions. So I had the goal of coming up with 52 questions, a question a week, that people could ask themselves, both privately or in a group discussion, that will help them understand that there is white privilege and what race means and how our lives are different. So I didn't quite get 52 questions, but I got 3 questions a month and then an opportunity at the end of the month to reflect on what I've learned, what I need to learn, and what are the resources or people I need to help. So after you've studied for 3 weeks of the month, you can set goals as to where you want to go next.
Essentially, it's a series of blank pages except for the questions that you raise, giving people an opportunity to write down their responses.
Right.
Have you had any kind of feedback from anybody yet with regard to how it's worked for them?
The one question response I get is, I didn't know. Yeah. And why didn't I know? And why didn't I know goes back to the fish in the water. White people live in a world based on white privilege, and we don't have to ask. You know, we don't have to worry about driving down Highway 40 and getting stopped because our car is old or stopped because we're black.
I have one example here that I'd like to play for you based on some recording that we have done in the past on this program and elsewhere. In August of 2014, the St. Louis Public Radio hosted a town hall meeting in downtown Ferguson to address the issues raised by the death of Michael Brown. A Caucasian audience member made this comment about an incident that happened to his son's African-American friend.
I have a 17-year-old son who's almost 18 as well, so this story hits me at an emotional level too. His friend was over the other night talking about riding his bicycle home one evening, getting stopped by a policeman and being harassed about, where'd you get that bike? What are you doing in this neighborhood? Can you prove that this bike is yours? How many 16-year-olds are going to have a receipt for a bike? That's not going to happen to my son because he's a white kid.
No, it's not always blatant and very obvious. It can be relatively subtle, can it?
Absolutely. And again, we don't understand why that would happen because we're taught that law enforcement is there to help and protect us. And when we see a police officer, we know, well, that's a good guy or a good person.
We've all heard the stories about driving while black, and I've had so many guests on this program to whom I've asked this question, has it ever happened to you? And almost without exception, regardless of background, regardless of education, regardless of anything except the color of their skin, they all say, yes, it has happened.
Right.
With regard to the questions you ask, is this journal of yours only for white people?
I have some of my friends who are people of color. I've given the book to so they can share it with other friends who need it. Mm-hmm. So it is written primarily and targeted to white people.
But you want the people who read it and make use of what is available to them there to engage in broader conversations, which I assume you would hope would include black people.
Yes. Yes. I think we have to understand that racism and white privilege was created by white people. Hmm. And you don't need a person of color to help you understand it. It is wonderful when as you build allies and you can have candid conversations. But it's when I say our white people responsibility to understand this. And one of the reasons I wrote the book is a lot of people are uncomfortable. Well, this amazes me. It said, how do I meet black people? Mm-hmm. That one just always amazes me. But this gives them some background and understanding. And if they can go on and discuss this comfortably in a white space, they'll be better prepared to move into a multicultural area and develop some relationships.
Your comment about the question, how do I meet black people, takes me to a caller here I think has something to say about this. This would be Brent calling from St. Louis. Brent, go ahead. You're on the air. Brent, are you there?
Are you there?
Yeah, go ahead.
He kind of stole my thunder. You know, white privilege is not obvious to whites because we don't have to go in the black community if we don't want to. But blacks usually have to come into the white world to work, to experience driving while black, things like that. And, you know, I remember, I mean, I was already kind of on board with where you're coming from before, but, you know, just take a ride on a bus and you realize how long it takes just to get a very short distance. And if you're black, living in North St. Louis, trying to get to your job in the county, you might have to take three buses, and it takes, you know, just simple things like that. And they mound up to accumulate to a lot of deficits in your personal life. And you don't have to, if you're white, you probably don't have to live through that.
Brent, thank you. Thank you for the call. We do live in bubbles, so many of us, don't we?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I have another clip I'd like to play for you because it gives us an opportunity to see how it plays on the other side of the fence and how it plays with regard to the black population. We had a discussion with Gregory Carr and his 14-year-old son, Carr Jr., Gregory Carr Jr., following the death of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile by police officers. We had previously talked with Carr Sr., who was an African-American, about issues he faced in his own life of being stopped by police. This was Carr Jr.'s response to my question of how he was feeling as an almost 15-year-old African-American.
I see a scared young man in a scary, cruel world. Almost 15. I'm afraid to drive. I'm afraid to jog out in my own neighborhood. I'm afraid to even work out in my front yard because I feel like I'll be profiled by a police officer either passing by or a police officer already being there.
Well, how would you like to grow up like that, Tom?
Well, I was thinking that experience is so foreign to my children. And to the great majority of the people that live in my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. We'll get back to talking more about your journal. We're talking with Tom Schweitzer, who has written the Understanding What It Means to Be White and Privileged Journal. And we'll get to some of the questions that he poses, and perhaps you can think of how you might answer them, and even more likely perhaps to pick up this book at some point and answer all of the questions that Tom has here. We'll come back in just a moment. We have some callers who want to get into the conversation. We'll bring them in as well. 382-8255 is the number. It's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you would prefer to send a tweet, do so at STL on air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back to our conversation with Tom Schweitzer. He is the author of The Understanding What It Means to Be White and Privileged Journal. And pretty much the title tells what that's all about. We have a number of calls I'd like to get to, Tom. And let's begin to take those calls with Monroe calling from St. Louis. Monroe, thank you for waiting. You're on the air with Tom Schweitzer.
Hello, Don, and hi, Tom. I attend a church that's 97% white, that is embarking on a white privilege awareness program. One of the challenges that always comes up is anytime a black person complains about any kind of racial slight, however slight or however impactful, it's always dismissed. It takes white allies and white advocates to push the story, to convince people in places where blacks even aren't in presence, because that's how we progress. It's not going to progress if no matter how much we protest in the streets. It's not going to happen there. It's going to happen when white advocates turn around the disbelief of what we're saying.
Monroe, thank you for the call. Well, Tom, that's exactly what you're doing, I think.
Certainly trying. And I will say to Monroe, I don't know what your church is doing, but there's a wonderful program sponsored by the YWCA of St. Louis called Witnessing Whiteness. Hmm. And we'll send facilitators out to help you put that program in your church.
You had mentioned something off the air, and I think I know what you're getting at, but let me put it to you here with regard to our famous Thanksgiving dinners, which is approaching very soon, and the kinds of conversations we have.
Well, Don, I talked about Uncle Charlie. We all have an Uncle Charlie who comes to Thanksgiving dinner and often has too much to drink, and starts spouting their political and social views. And most of us try to argue with Uncle Charlie. And my first solution is go sit at the kids' table. It's a lot more fun. But Be prepared for Uncle Charlie and take some time to learn what it means to call someone in, not call someone out. Mm-hmm. Calling out is, Uncle Charlie, you're a stupid idiot. Mm-hmm. Calling in is, Uncle Charlie, I didn't quite understand where that thought came from. Or even take him into the other room and ask him a question about what he was saying.
That sounds like pretty good advice. And there are a lot of those conversations that go on. I'm going to take some more calls, but I want you, Tom, to give a sense to our audience of the kinds of questions, the kinds of reflections that you're asking for in your journal.
Well, there's several questions. There's some quotes I'd like to get to. But in week 9, we quote the comedian Chris Rock saying, "Not one of you white people would trade places with me, and I'm rich."
Yeah.
So why would Chris Rock say that?
Well, it makes the point. You don't have to think very hard to figure out what he's getting at. He's done some wonderful work, a comedic work, that has a real edge to it with regard to trying to get people to understand what's going on. He has one in particular with regard to telling young black men what they should do if a cop does pull them over.
Right.
Very solid advice. I mean, it's funny, but it's not funny because it's true.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, to address that, we periodically in St. Louis have a program called Mother to Mother, which is sponsored by the Ethics Project. And if you ever get a chance to go there, you'll hear mothers and fathers talk about the talk that we hear so much about. One of the other questions, because this does white privilege does not just pertain to whites and blacks, but people of color. During World War II, we interned Japanese citizens, but not German or Italian. Mm-hmm. No. Why?
Right.
Why is that?
Sure.
Why is that?
Yeah.
And it feeds to our prejudices.
The question answers itself, really. Right. We have a tweet here from Lori who says it should be called white advantage instead of white privilege. What do you think?
I'd like to hear why she uses the word advantage. I'm not opposed to it, but that is a good word.
It's pretty much the same thing,
it seems
to me. All righty, let's take another call here. We'll bring in Sharon calling from St. Louis. Sharon, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I've heard a couple of the comments. I just kind of got back in the car and was listening to the program. But I just want to say I think that people that are not of color need to understand that all people of color are not a monolith. We don't all live in North St. Louis. We don't all take the bus to work. Some of us have great high-paying jobs. But the bottom line is, no matter what, it's not like that we're looking for anything extra. We're looking for an opportunity to do what we want to do, to be free to do whatever we want to do, to move out of the way and let us just live our lives.
Right. Well, thank you, Sharon. And I don't think people of color are asking us to give anything up materially, but we want equality, not being equal. And sometimes to become a country of equality, it takes some extra steps.
Thank you, Sharon, for the call. Let's bring in Greg. He's calling from High Ridge, Missouri. Greg, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Yeah, I am a union carpenter here in St. Louis. I grew up out in the county. I grew up away from all of the racial divides, mainly because, admittedly, yes, I grew up in a place that was predominantly white. But the problem I have, that I see, that's on the flip side of that, is when I go on construction sites, and it's especially government-funded sites, we have affirmative action laws where there are, for lack of a better way to put it, a quota that says there has to be a certain number of people of color. And it doesn't matter if they're skilled or not, because I've worked with people of color that are very skilled, very very well-trained and very talented craftsmen. However, I've also worked with people of color and white people that are horrible at their job. But cases where, because of affirmative action, you could have somebody who's an incredibly talented person, but he has to be laid off because we have to have so many people of color on the job site. And I'm just wondering what the author's opinion of that plan or that program that the government has put in place is.
Thank you, Greg.
My first question is, and I've heard comments like this before, but could you direct me to some resources that would back up what you say, that we're laying off white people in order to employ people of color? I'd be interested where you get that information. I think racism began in our country on October 13th, 1492, when Christopher Columbus recorded in his journal the day after he landed in the Americas or the Western Hemisphere. He basically said, what a beautiful country. The people are bringing us food and stones, and with 50 men, we could surround them and subjugate them and make them do whatever we want. Mm. So we have a history of bias and prejudice in this country, and it's time to break down some of those long-held beliefs and give opportunities to people that don't have them and historically have not had them.
There's been some of that discussion just recently on Columbus Day, when people think maybe we shouldn't pay such high tribute to this man,
right,
given
right.
What he was.
My great-grandfather came to the country in 1873, and I've had discussions with some of my allies of color about the lives and paths their great-grandfathers took from 1873 compared to mine. My great-grandfather came here penniless, but he was given opportunities that were denied to the ancestors of some of my friends.
He was white. He didn't stand out. He couldn't be set aside and pushed aside.
Right.
That's a very typical kind of story in this country. Let's take another call. Joe in Richmond Heights, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Hey, Don. It's an absolute privilege to be able to contribute to your show.
Thank you.
You had that tweet earlier where the woman said perhaps it should be called white advantage, and you said, you know, I'd like to talk to that lady. I have actually said the very same thing, and I say it because of this. I think the word privilege, people use the word privilege and they say, like, oh, that's not a right, that's a privilege. They think it's something that you earn. And I think that white folks in America, they think, they look at the things that they do in life. They go to work, they buy houses, they buy cars, and they say, I earned those things, but you're telling me that I got them for free. And I think white Americans know that there is some sort of systemic racism in this country that's been going on for decades, and it has been getting better, but that somehow they do benefit from it. And in this country, we have laws, and when you get benefits or when you transgress against someone, the law steps in and tries to make people whole. And I think white people in this country, we earn what we have. We don't get it for free, is what they say. But they're also afraid that if they admit that there's institutionalized racism, that they'll have to give up something.
Okay, Joe, thank you for the call. What do you think, Tom Schweitzer?
I don't think white people have to give up anything. I think we need to create a world where everyone has the same opportunities. And again, over generations, we have created laws or attitudes that prevent that. When I go into a store and write a check, rarely am I asked for multiple forms of ID, but I know many of my friends of color are. When I went after World War II, the 1950s sort of built the middle class of America. And after World War II, or as a result of World War II, we created the GI Bill. So my father could go to college on a GI loan, and he could buy his first house on a federally sponsored mortgage. But those benefits were denied to most African-American soldiers, either out of pure discrimination or redlining or college quotas. So we built this entire white middle class of America but kept out a significant number of soldiers who put their lives on the line also.
We had a segregated military until 1948,
right,
after World War.
Right.
We've only got about a minute left, Tom. Where can people get the book?
The book is available at Subterranean Books in the Loop. You can get it on Amazon, or you can go to our website, which is www.whiteandprivilege.com.
I am sure you want to assure people it is not difficult to journal.
No, it's not. And it's a great opportunity to take some private time and be alone with your thoughts and identify questions you need help with.
That's Tom Schweitzer. The book is The Understanding What It Means to Be White and Privileged Journal. Tom, I want to thank you so much for being with us. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Had a lot of good calls today. People are certainly interested in this subject, especially today and especially in this place. Tom Schweitzer, thank you. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.